Chapter 18. Instead of taking the Sanabuft corridor to the Errant Ventures parade deck, where 24 eager Academy students stood waiting to display their force skills, Luke and his companions followed a freshly preened booster Terek into a lift tube and ascended directly to the bridge. The Star Destroyer could orbit Eclipse only so long before it risked exposing the base's location, so the last thing anyone in the group wanted was to spend time watching the Holonet. Unfortunately, they had just received word that Numanor was about to address the Senate regarding the Talfalian hostages, and that Borsk Thalia himself had asked both Wedge Antilles and Garm Bel-Iblis to attend. There could be no doubt that something major was about to happen, and that it would be of great importance to the Jedi. Booster led them along the back of the bridge into the ship's comm center, where an old Imperial holoprojector sat at the far end of a conference table littered with data pads, science projects, and flimsoplast dye paintings. In addition to Luke and Booster, there were Corrin and Mirax Horn, Han and Leia, R2-D2 and C-3PO, and, fussing discontentedly in Mara's arms, Ben. Tion and Cam Solisar were on the parade deck with their students, explaining that Master Skywalker was looking forward to seeing them very much and would be along soon. Luke had not yet heard how Corrin and Mirax had escaped from the Voxen on Corellia. Their story had been interrupted by news of Numanor's address, but they claimed it was nothing too exciting, save that they would need to find some way of quietly reimbursing Corellian transport services for a badly corroded hover taxi. Ben grew more disgruntled as the group gathered around the transceiver pad. He was normally the most imperturbable of babies, but there were times when he simply could not be consoled. Now, as R2-D2 tuned the ancient transceiver to the Senate holoband, Ben broke into a fit of wailing. Luke felt Mara reaching out through the Force to calm him. When that did not help, he did so himself. Ben only cried harder. Mara sighed heavily and turned to take the baby into the next room. Leia intercepted her. "Let me. I really don't need to see this." Mara nodded and passed Ben over. The infant calmed almost instantly. Luke and Mara exchanged surprised glances, both feeling a little distressed that they had not been able to comfort their son themselves, but knowing there was more to it than that.
"I was thinking about Anakin," Leia said, her eyes fixed on Ben's face. "I was watching Mara and wishing there had been more time for me to hold him when he was this age."
Luke smiled and turned back to the holopad, where the cam was zooming in on a figure in the Grand Convocation Chamber. To Vicky Shesh's eye, Numanor looked too certain of himself. Though Thalia had denied him the privilege of appearing in warrior's garb, the executor carried himself tall and haughtily, all but deaf to the taunts of the jeering senators, his one eye fixed on the High Counselor's dais. He wore a shimmering robe of living glista-web, nearly as proof against blaster bolts as Vondoon crab armor, but far more innocuous, at least to those who did not know the secret of its charge-neutralizing fibers. Numanor stepped to the center of the speaker's platform and waited for silence. It would be a long wait, Vicky knew. After Thalia's public declarations of support for the Jedi lovers were content to wait for the Bothans' signal before they stopped heckling. Never one to miss a chance to bully an enemy, Thalia did not give Numanor a chance to correct his mistake. He leaned forward, peering down from behind his chief of state's console, and spoke into the microphone. "You asked for this audience," Thalia's amplified voice reverberated through the chamber, quieting the hecklers. "Have you come to explain the Talfalian hostages?" Numanor's now empty eye socket twitched. "Hardly. You understand the situation. I have come to inform you the War Master has extended the deadline for the Jedi surrender." The chamber burst into an astonished rustle. Vicky was as shocked as everyone else,
for the War Master was not the type to yield to Felia's empty threats. Perhaps Nomanor was playing some game of his own. Now that Felia had thrown his support behind the Jedi, perhaps the Executor believed he could strike a deal with the Appeasers. Such a plan would have to be stopped, and quickly, or it might be Nomanor instead of her who replaced Felia when Savonglah's killers finally attacked. She did not understand what was taking the assassins so long. Most of the opportunities she had listed for them were already past, and so far she had not heard of even a suspicious loiterer near the chief of state. Not waiting for the commotion to fade, Vicky activated her own microphone.
"How do you explain this sudden attack of conscience, Mr. Ambassador?"
Nomanor's expression remained far too smug.
"The War Master has come to realize it may be difficult for the New Republic to comply with his orders on short notice."
He paused and turned away from the High Counselor's dais to look directly into the galleries.
"Last night, a concerned citizen turned over 17 young Jedi."
The Convocation Chamber burst into such an uproar that it was impossible to hear the rest of Nomanor's statement. Vicky fell back in her chair, as stunned as the others in the room, and began to wonder how such a thing could happen. No bounty hunter in the galaxy could just fly out and collect 17 Jedi. She doubted that even a company of bounty hunters could do it. To restore order, Felia was forced to darken the chamber. And even then, he had to wait several minutes before he could make himself heard enough to order the sergeant-at-arms to have the security droids remove any senator who continued to yell. When light was finally restored, the Bothan's ears were flattened, and a long ridge of hair was standing along the back of his neck.
"I don't believe you," he said.
Vicky was inclined to agree, as was most of the Senate. A rising murmur threatened to crest into another uproar, until the security droids brought the noise under control by issuing stern warnings about decibel levels. Nomanor sneered.
"I have a list."
He made a show of consulting a sheet of what looked like the shed skin of a snake, then said,
"The leader is Ganna Rysoed. His assistants seem to be Tisar Sebatine and a Wookiee named Lobaka."
A plaintive howl echoed down from the Wookiee gallery, and a security droid was slapped out of the air by a hairy claw.
"The Bith Jedi Ulaha Kor was wounded resisting capture, and I certainly recognize the Solo name."
"Solo?"
Wedge Antilles gasped. Along with Garmbel Iblis, he was standing behind Felia's seat for some reason Vicky did not yet understand.
"You have a Solo?"
The chamber fell so quiet that the next question, from General Bel Iblis, would have carried to the top gallery even without being picked up by Felia's microphone.
"Which one, Anakin or the twins?"
The smug look vanished from Nomanor's face.
"Twins?"
He quickly forced a sneer, but to Vicky the expression looked more sick than snide.
"We have the three young ones."
The two generals glanced at each other with fallen faces, and Felia's ears drooped, but only Vicky seemed to perceive Nomanor's subtle shift of attitude. She did not know what significance twins had to the Yuuzhan Vong, but it seemed clear enough to her that there was one, and that, with a little help from her, Nomanor would look like a fool to Savonglah for not realizing it. Vicky leaned forward and glared at the Yuuzhan Vong as though challenging his claim.
"Jason and Jaina are twins, Mr. Ambassador."
She leaned back, then added with a disdainful smirk,
"It's common knowledge. They're twins, just like their mother and Luke Skywalker."
Nomanor's good eye narrowed, and he glared at her in open anger.
"It does not matter what they are."
He forced himself to look back to Felia.
"What I came here to say, what the War Master wishes me to say, is that he is not unreasonable. He will spare the Talfalian hostages, as long as the New Republic continues to turn over its Jedi.
Thalia rose from his seat.
Never!
Nomanor ignored him and turned to the gallery.
A like number every...
His microphone suddenly went dead, preventing his last three words from reaching the Senate gallery.
Vicky keyed her own microphone. A like number every 10 standard days. You have the right to know whether the Chief of State wants you to or not.
Her words instantly had an inflammatory effect, causing such a heated exchange that the security droids actually began to chase a handful of senators toward the exits with sting bolts. Thalia pressed a button on his console and rose, his voice now reverberating from both the chamber's public address system and the individual conferencing consoles.
What the Chief of State wants you to know, whether Counselor Shesh wishes it or not, is how the Yuuzhan Vong conduct their diplomacy.
Miff Kumis, the Senate sergeant-at-arms, appeared at the edge of the chamber floor, his big calabop wings fluttering madly as he struggled to keep pace with the three big defense droids used to deal with serious matters in the Senate. Thalia glanced in Vicky's direction just long enough to bare his fangs, and she suddenly knew the Chief of State remained alive not because of Savong La's tardiness in ordering the kill, but because the assassins had failed. Blood running cold, she calmly stood and turned to leave the High Counselor's dais. Thalia touched his control board, and his voice sounded from her conferencing console.
"Going somewhere, Counselor?"
Vicky lifted her chin and met his violet eyes as steadily as she was able.
"I have a personal need."
He smiled wickedly.
"Stay. This won't take long, and I'm sure you will find it most... enlightening."
Faced with prospect of being publicly stunned into submission by Kumis's protection droids, or maintaining at least a plausible pretense of her innocence, she returned to her seat and tried to pretend she did not feel the thoughtful gazes of the two generals boring into her.
"I will trust you to make this fast."
"Of course. A quick kill is safest."
Thalia touched a key, once again feeding his microphone into the public address system, then turned back to Nomanor.
"Recently a squad of Yuuzhan Vong infiltrators made an attempt on my life."
A half-doubtful murmur filled the chamber, and Vicky's stomach grew so qualmish she feared her personal need would soon become legitimate. Thalia raised his hands.
"There are certainly some who will view this as a cynical ploy to garner political advantage. But I assure you that is not the case."
He glared down at Nomanor, who had finally noticed the droids and Calabop approaching behind him.
"My only desire is to make certain the appeasers in this body understand who they are dealing with. To that end, I have brought two men to substantiate this attack. A pair of generals whose honesty is beyond reproach, and who, as many of you know, bear me no particular good faith."
He motioned the generals forward, and Wedge Antilles leaned to the microphone.
"It was a well-planned attack."
General Bel Iblis was next.
"Unfortunately, we were engaged in classified work, and the details must remain secret. But it happened as Chief Thalia says. There can be no doubt."
The doubtful murmur quickly assumed a tone of outrage, and Vicky's stomach growled so loudly that her microphone picked up the sound. Thalia turned to her expectantly.
"Senator Shesh?" he asked. "Do you have anything to say?"
Vicky glared vibroblades at him. She checked the protection droids and found them hovering beside Nomanor, less than 5 meters away. Only the certain knowledge that they would stun her before she could shoot kept her from palming her stealth blaster.
"What should I say, Borsk? I'm sorry?"
Thalia smiled triumphantly.
"An apology is hardly necessary, Senator Shesh. You were only trying to save Kuat."
He glanced in Nomanor's direction. "As long as you see your mistake now."
"My mistake?"
Vicky gasped, beginning to comprehend that her secret remained secret. Perhaps her contact had been killed in the attack, or perhaps Yuuzhan Vong infiltrators were trained to withstand even modern interrogation techniques. It hardly mattered. Felia thought he had defeated her challenge, her political challenge. Now he wanted to draw her back into the fold and consolidate his support, and he still had no idea what game they were really playing. No idea at all. Vicky smiled and inclined her head.
I do see my mistake.
She turned to glare at Nomanor.
You just can't trust the Yuuzhan Vong.
Oh my, C-3PO said to no one in particular. Did you notice the interest Nomanor showed when he discovered that Jaina and Jason were twins? Neither Luke nor anyone else answered the droid, for their attention remained riveted on the holopad, where Borsk Felia was gleefully informing Nomanor of his arrest. It troubled Luke that the Yuuzhan Vong did not bother protesting his innocence. He merely glared at the Bothan, as though they both knew the truth. Of course, it's impossible to know the significance of twins to the Yuuzhan Vong, C-3PO babbled on. But in approximately 98.7% of the cultures in our own galaxy, they represent the dualistic nature of the universe, good and evil, light and dark, male and female. When the twins are in harmony, there is balance to the universe. In the hologram, Miff Kumis fluttered forward with a pair of stun cuffs, his three protection droids arrayed in a triangle around the Yuuzhan Vong. To Luke's great surprise, the Yuuzhan Vong extended his arms and brought his wrists together, then grabbed his own little finger and tore it off. A string of black vapor sprayed out of the base, billowing up around Nomanor and Miff Kumis in cloud of inky miasma. The event seemed to lie outside the parameters of the protection droid's programming, for they did not open fire until the Yuuzhan Vong thrust the stump of his finger into the Calabop's startled face. Luke saw the first bolts strike Nomanor's shimmering robe and blink out without causing him harm. Then both figures vanished inside the expanding cloud of darkness. Paying no attention at all to what was happening in the hologram, C-3PO continued, "But whatever the significance of twins to our enemies, I fear it will only make Jason and Jaina's captors all the more vigilant." Nomano's reaction suggests, "C-3PO," Leia barked, returning to the room with Ben still quiet in her arms. "Yes, Mistress Leia, silence yourself before I decide you need a memory wipe." "A memory wipe?" C-3PO echoed. "Why in the world would I need a memory wipe?" R2-D2 tweedled a suggestion. "Well, I didn't mean to alarm Mr. Slayer," C-3PO objected. "I only thought—" Han reached behind the droid's head and tripped the primary circuit breaker. "Thank you," Luke said, though he knew Han had silenced the droid for Leia and himself. The scene in the hologram was confused, dark, and rapidly growing more so. Nomanor's cloud quickly filled the holocam's view, and the protector droids stopped firing as they lost contact with their target. The operator pulled back a wider view of the chamber, but the black fumes continued to expand, and even that view was obscured within a few seconds. The audio was filled with panicked screams and the sound of coughing and the thunder of running feet. There was a moment of static as the chamber's ventilation and fire suppression systems activated. Then the image began to clear rapidly. As the stairs and galleries grew visible again, they saw prone bodies lying everywhere. On the stairs, slumped over conferencing consoles, sprawled on communications ramps. "Sith spawn," Korn gasped. "He wiped out the entire Senate." "Knocked out," Luke corrected. He was still trying to puzzle out Nomanor's strange reaction to Felia's accusation. Luke knew for himself that the attempt on the chief's life had occurred, since both Han and Leia had been at the proving trials when the assassins struck. Yet the Yuuzhan Vong had reacted as though it were political fiction. "This wasn't about destroying the Senate. That kind of outrage would draw the New Republic together, and so far the Yuuzhan Vong have been trying to split it apart." It grew apparent that Luke was correct as the image zoomed back to the chamber floor. Even there, where the cloud had been thickest, The bodies were beginning to stir, hoarse throats to rasp for air. Kumis's wings began to flutter again, while Felia and the other counselors dragged themselves up and punched at their consoles, barking orders that made sense only to their confused minds. The three protection droids lay inert on the floor, the last swaddled in the still-shimmering robe Nomanor had been wearing. Of the Yuuzhan Vong himself, there was no sign.
"Got away clean," Han observed. "Probably had one of those masker things around his waist."
"Maybe palace security will pick him up."
Leia turned to Korn, who, as an ex-member of Corellian security, had more experience in such matters than anyone else.
"What do you think?"
Instead of answering, Korn only looked at her and Han with an expression of infinite sadness. He spread his arms and came around the table, Mirax following close behind. "Han, Leia, I'm so sorry."
"Hold on there, fella."
Han backed away, one hand raised to ward off the embrace of the former Corsac officer who, a few decades earlier, might have been hunting him down instead of offering him comfort.
"There's something you ought to know."
Korn stopped, looking equal parts hurt and confused. Luke chuckled.
"Korn, there's a reason I'm asking the Jedi to gather."
He glanced in Booster's direction and said,
"But this has to stay secret. Very secret."
Booster spread his palms and looked around the cabin.
"Who am I going to tell?"
Luke explained what Anakin and the strike team were doing, and how Eclipse was trying to put together a group of Jedi to defend the Talfalian hostages.
"Do you remember what you told Jason after the fall of Ithor? That if there ever came a time when folks looked forward to the return of the man who killed Ithor?"
"Master, I was a little, disappointed then," Korin said. "I didn't mean to sound bitter."
"And you didn't,"
Luke assured him. "But Korin, the time has come. The invasion is out of hand, and the Jedi need someone of your experience to help us prepare, to teach our young pilots how to fight as a unit and survive." Korin considered this for a moment, then cast a querying look in Mirax's direction.
"What else are we going to do?"
She hooked a thumb at her father. "Hang around with this old grouch?" Booster scowled and started to retort, then threw up his hands.
"I'm sworn to secrecy."
He eyed Luke. "I suppose you'll be needing a Star Destroyer for this fleet of yours."
"Not yet. Where could we hide you?"
As tempting as the offer was, Luke still wanted the Academy students kept out of harm's way. "Admiral Creefay has converted that old smuggler's hole at Reese into a rear base. He'd welcome an extra Star Destroyer there, and you'll be close enough to Eclipse to come running when things start to look bad." Booster fixed Luke with a sour glare.
"I know what you're doing, young fellow."
Luke smiled. "Good. I was starting to think you were slipping."